What's up, family? You are tuned into Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world in which all of us can thrive. From KPFA Radio and the Pacifica Network, I'm your host, Kat Brooks.
In January, just one day after Trump was certified as the next president by Congress, a massive Border Patrol raid took place in Bakersfield, California. 78 immigrants were detained under the guise of a crackdown on criminals, but when the dust settled, the data revealed only one out of the 78 people detained actually had any criminal record at all. We've got three guests joining us to discuss this morning. First, we welcome Bree Bernwanger, senior staff attorney with the ACLU of Northern California and lead attorney on the United Farm Workers versus Noem, a lawsuit which claims the Border Patrol violated the plaintiff's Fourth Amendment right against unreasonable searches and seizures, as well as their Fifth Amendment right to due process and other federal laws when raiding immigrant communities in Bakersfield in January of this year. Good morning, Bree.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for joining. We're also joined by Sergio Olmos, an investigative reporter for Cal Matters, whose latest reporting, along with our next guest, focuses on the same Border Patrol actions in Bakersfield that are being challenged in the lawsuit I just mentioned. Good morning, Sergio.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
And lastly, we are joined, but not leastly, joined by Wendy Fry, a multimedia investigative journalist who reports on poverty and inequality for the California Divide team at Cal Matters and has been collaborating with Sergio on covering the Border Patrol Bakersfield raids. Good morning, Wendy.
Good morning.
Okay, so I'm gonna throw questions out there. I've got people's names by them, but you all may decide that somebody else is more equipped to answer the question, so feel free to override the person that I throw the question to. But Wendy, I am actually going to start with you and to just have you walk us through what happened on January 7th, and then Sergio, you can chime in once she's done.
Right, and Sergio can chime in here anytime, but on January 7th, you know, we started seeing social media reports that agents, at first it wasn't really clear what kind of agents were in Kern County at various locations throughout the community. And then Sergio was there and he started going around to these different locations based on tips from the community and trying to figure out which agency it was. Finally figured out it was Border Patrol, and then started peeling back what Border Patrol was saying that they were doing about with that operation Return to Sender.
Yeah, I mean, I'll add that that day there on January 7th in Bakersfield, I went to go pick up court records for an unrelated story and to talk to some people in agriculture to just kind of prep for the next administration and what immigration enforcement would look like. And I got, you know, the person I was with got a call that ICE was at Costco. I went to Costco, they weren't there. Then I heard Home Depot, they weren't there. And I went to a second Home Depot, and that's when I talked to the security guard. And he's like, yeah, no, they rounded up some people in the morning. Which is all to say that, like, people who work, you know, volunteers for, like, rapid response networks in different counties across California, this is the stuff they deal with all day, every day, you know, since since January 7th. They're hearing constant rumors and trying to verify that stuff that Bree can talk about. That's how that day started. It would take months of work by multiple reporters, me and Wendy and the team at Evident, to reconstruct that day and to just verify the simple facts that, you know, Border Patrol said happened. It would take months of work to kind of prove that some of that was, you know, was misleading.
But Sergio, you were there. Paint a picture for my listeners on what the environment was like that morning. What did you encounter as you were trying to chase Border Patrol around and see what they were doing?
Let's recall back to, you know, President Joe Biden was still in office January 7th, day after the certification of Donald Trump's election, right? So it was, everybody was still kind of, especially newsrooms, like, okay, let's prep for, you know, the next administration. And Bakersfield, you know, it's the breadbasket of California, right? Like, it's the agricultural hub. The people I talked to, nobody was expecting raids in that part of California. I mean, everybody I talked to was like, oh no, there's like there's never enough workers here. Like, we don't, you know, Kern County is it's very conservative. Like, a lot of people, it's very conservative, right? In many ways. That day was such a shock to everybody I talked to. I mean, there was nobody I talked to who was like, oh no, this makes sense. Like, you talk to growers, you talk to laborers, you talk to just regular people. And then there's a community page on Instagram called Kern County Activities, which is like really well followed, really like relied on. And that they were posting updates all day, like just people throwing up photos of what was Border Patrol. And like one more thing here, on like again, because there was no news coverage, like this was happening so fast, so many rumors, nobody really knew what was happening. There was an interesting moment in the Facebook page of the local Kern County, like that they the people who ran that Facebook page like kicked out people who were posting photos of Border Patrol because they were like, no, we don't want to impede their progress. So that the people that were getting kicked out of that Facebook group started their own page that became bigger, where everybody started kind of saying like, hey, we see Border Patrol here and here and here. So like that's how that January 7th day went, with just people on social media kind of like harkening back to like, you know, 10 years ago, like Tahrir Square, when people were talking about social media really aiding social movements. This felt like that, where just on Facebook and Instagram is people throwing up locations of Border Patrol.
It was also sort of this like idea of foreshadowing, like, is this the way it's going to be the whole time that, you know, Trump, it was the first kind of thing that we saw. And so there was this kind of terror in the community of, is this what we're looking forward to for the next 4 years?
Yeah, and I'm going to have us reflect on that before I let the three of you go, because I think it's really important to this conversation that we're having. Sergio and or Wendy, I before I bring Bree into the conversation and talk about, you know, what the stated pretense of the raid was versus what actually happened, I think it's a good idea to spend a couple of minutes sitting in a conversation about this character, Border Patrol agent in charge of this operation, Gregory Bovino. Which one of you wants to talk to us about this dude?
Yeah, so I sat down with him in his office in El Centro, and we, you know, he had like four or five armed agents standing behind me the whole time for the whole hour-long interview. You know, they weren't allowed to sit; they were standing behind me, just kind of watching this as an audience with Greg Bovino kind of telling a reporter what's what. You know, the way he comes across is exactly the way that you would see him on his social media, which he's become very popular as a Border Patrol chief on social media. He has three agents who curate his social media. He has five federal agents who all they do is make videos. So like they make fictional videos of their actions. Like they're actually fictional, right? They have like they're storytelling. Gregory Bovino is a guy who, you know, he told congressional investigators a few years ago that, you know, idle hands are the devil's plaything. You know, he really admires Eisenhower and the operation that he did in the 50s. And I had to look that up because I didn't know what he was referring to, like when reading the transcript. And he's talking about Operation Wetback, right? He thinks that Border Patrol can be much more useful in the interior. He has about 1,000 agents. The crossings have dropped over 90% year to date. There's a lot of agents who are sitting in their car with air conditioning on, kind of not doing much. When I was there, they hadn't encountered a single person in 3 days. So, and 1,000 agents is a lot. I mean, that is a lot of personnel. And he, again, does not like idle hands. This operation into Bakersfield, McKern County, was very much a kind of test case. I think he was trying to audition to be used as a kind of tip of the spear. And I'll end on this, which is, there's only about 5,000 ICE agents across the country, right? If you're going to carry out mass deportations, especially in California, where, you know, because of SB 54, local agencies, local law enforcement cannot work with immigration agencies, right? They cannot partake in that. You're going to need a partner agency. And so if you're Border Patrol, there's like about 19,500 or so agents. It's a much bigger agency. It's much bigger, much more manpower than ICE. They'd be the perfect, you know, the ideal federal agency to assist ICE. And I think Gregory Bovino kind of saw that and was trying to show what a raid in the interior would look like under kind of his command.
Sergio, I'm going to bring Bree in right after you answer the question about, you mentioned fictional stories. I think it's important you tug on that thread for my listeners. What kinds of stories, what kinds of videos is this guy making and putting out into the world?
Yeah, so he told us in the interview in his office, again, with a bunch of pictures, five federal agents, armed agents standing behind me, and he's kind of, you know, telling me about these fictional videos. And I ask him why he makes these fictional videos. Why not just talk about what you're actually doing? And he pushed back, and he said, these are actually not fictional, you know, which is, you know, I didn't know what to do with that. Like, they're fictional videos, right? But he's like, no, they're not fictional, because this happens all the time to Americans. And you can see them online. They're called The Getaway. Anytown USA, you know, he's very big on the idea that this could happen anywhere, and any town is a border town, really. And in one of them, there's two agents sitting in a car, and they're listening to a radio broadcast. It's a real radio broadcast of a immigrant who murdered a woman. you know, we looked at the broadcast is actually from 10 years ago, but in the video it's current day, and a migrant comes over and he kind of stabs an American citizen. And there's other ones where there's like a swift boat and migrants get off like they're invading the country and they go off and they kind of terrorize children. So it's very clearly made to look like a kind of Hallmark movie of migrants coming in who with like bloodlust to hurt Americans, hurt children. And again, this is a federal agency with five federal Border Patrol agents making these videos. You know, the Border Patrol has actual data, like Customs and Border Protection has data on everything, every encounter, they've actually in the last 9 years encountered less than 300 people convicted of murder or manslaughter. The percentage is so low that we looked it up. It's like more people are like struck, more Americans are struck by lightning every year than Border Patrol encounters somebody convicted of murder or manslaughter. Like it is actually a very low percentage of people they encounter who are convicted of murder or manslaughter. But in these videos, you know, it looks like there's just an invading army of Latino men who just get off the boat and just look for the nearest playground to attack someone.
And Wendy Fry, you're a journalist. You understand the importance of communications and narrative and how that then impacts the political, cultural, social policy fabric of our communities. Yes.
Yeah, and I'll just add to what Sergio is saying is that, you know, this has been the narrative that the Republican Party has been bringing along for many, many years, much longer than just the most recent years. This narrative of these are dangerous criminals coming into your community to hurt your wife and children. But by doing that, they've been able to build support for their mass deportation campaign, because if the public knew that the type of people that they are detaining do not have criminal histories, are not dangerous in any way or a threat to public safety, they would not be as supportive of what the Trump administration plans to carry out.
All right, Bree, we are past due to bring you into this conversation. What was the name of this raid? What was the pretense, and who actually was targeted?
Yeah. The raid was called Operation Return to Sender, and clearly the goal of the raid was to get as many people out of the country as possible without due process. It was billed to the press as a targeted operation seeking to disrupt the trafficking networks of transnational criminal organizations, targeting drug traffickers. That's just dead wrong. That's not what they did. What Border Patrol did was set up a days-long operation. So this wasn't just January 7th. This took place over the course of that week. They drove up to Bakersfield, Kern County, the surrounding areas. We have reports of them going up into Tulare County as well. And they swarmed the highways, and they went to places where they knew Latina people would be. It was a fishing expedition. Whatever they have to say about their targets, as the CalMatters folks have already said, the people they arrested were not people with criminal history. They didn't know anything about them before they stopped them. They pulled them over or grabbed them out of a parking lot based on assumptions, an assumption that if you're brown, you're undocumented. And that's illegal, but that's what they did. They arrested people without considering their community ties, whether they're a flight risk. That's also a legal violation. And then they drove them back down to the El Centro sector. And this is where sort of the goal of the operation becomes clear. They held them in their Border Patrol station, the Yalera, which like we've all heard reporting about, these Border Patrol stations where usually people are coming from the other direction. People have crossed the border, they've been apprehended, and they're put in these ice boxes, these Border Patrol holding centers that are not meant for any kind of long-term confinement. There's no beds. There's extremely limited food. There's no showers. It's very cold. You just get that like marathon blanket. You know, it's not a blanket, the like aluminum sheet thing. And they held them there while they coerced them into accepting voluntary departure. Voluntary departure is not deportation. You can't usually be deported unless a judge enters a deportation order against you. I think that's really important for people to know. There is supposed to be a process. Voluntary departure is an agreement that you will return to your country of origin without that process. And so you don't have a deportation order, but depending on your circumstances, if you've been in the U.S. for any real length of time, you're probably going to have a bar on ever reentering. So the consequences can be really serious, and it's not a good fit for a lot of people who have lives here. Border Patrol didn't tell people that. They told people lies. For example, that accepting voluntary departure would make it easier to come back into the country and reunite with their citizen spouse, citizen children. Or they told people they didn't have a choice, that they had to go back. Or they didn't tell people anything, presented them with a form that they and lied about what was on it, didn't allow anyone to read it, and just told them they had to sign. Regardless of like which tactic they used, we know that about 40 people were coerced into accepting voluntary departure. And within days of this raid beginning, were stranded in Mexico. And that most of those people had been in the country for years. So, Sergio and Wendy were talking about like the what the community was like when this was happening. From our perspective, during the week of January 7th, our colleagues at ACLU of Southern California work on rapid response in Bakersfield. We were getting calls from families in Bakersfield whose family members had been disappeared. We couldn't figure out which agency had done the raid. In some cases, Border Patrol was in marked cars, but in many cases, these were plainclothes officers with masks on in unmarked cars going up to people and grabbing them off the street. It often took us days to figure out where people were. We would look them up in like the immigration detainee locator. It's a website where you can look up where people are detained, and it wouldn't say where they were. Finally, days in, it said they were in the El Centro Border Patrol station. And in many cases, immediately after that, we'd find out that someone was in Mexico. So that's how the operation worked. And I just want to say, like, rights were violated at every step of the way. First, Border Patrol, police, ICE, whoever you are, the Fourth Amendment puts limits on who you can stop in a way where they're not free to go. You have to have a reason. You have to have a reason to stop that particular person. And their race is not a legal reason. Second, there are limits on who immigration agencies can arrest without getting a warrant first. They have to evaluate whether you're likely to flee before arresting you. And people with really strong community ties are not likely to flee. So you can't just round up everybody you find and arrest them. And then third, the way that they coerced people into voluntary departure violated the due process rights of people in their custody. There is a fundamental right to a hearing, regardless of your immigration status. You should get to see a judge if that's what you want to do. And that was just not made available to people.
Thank you for all of that, Bree. So initially, ACLU NorCal, you filed a restraining order, but now there's a lawsuit. Talk to us about what the lawsuit alleges and what you're hoping the outcome will be.
Sure. So we actually didn't file a restraining order. We filed a lawsuit in February, really challenging these three practices that drove the operation. Practice number one, stopping people in a way where they're not free to go without a reason to stop that person. Number two, arresting people without a warrant and without even considering flight risk. And number three, coercing people into voluntary departure without due process. We then filed a motion for preliminary injunction, which is just a legal way of saying we're asking the judge to intervene early in the lawsuit to make sure these really urgently harmful practices stop while the lawsuit is pending. And the preliminary injunction motion covers the first two steps of the operation. So we asked the judge to require Border Patrol to change its practices on stopping people and on arresting people without a warrant, and to make sure that there's some meaning to the standards, because clearly in return to sender, they were getting it wrong. And there's a real risk that this will happen again for the reasons Sergio and Wendy mentioned, and also because for the, you know, weeks and months after the operation, the El Centro Border Patrol sector in particular was all over social media saying that they were going to do this again. Return to Sender 2.0 is coming to Bakersfield. We're coming to Fresno, Sacramento, all across the Central Valley. So there's a real risk that Border Patrol is going to continue to use these practices that terrorize communities and are completely unrooted from the law.
There's some real stories, right? There's people were impacted on that day. And I'd like to talk just a little bit about that. If someone could maybe start with Maria Guadalupe Hernandez Espinosa. What happened to her?
Sure. So Maria is one of our clients and a plaintiff in the lawsuit. She's a longtime resident of Kern County, a farm worker, was in a car that was stopped for, again, no reason. You know, one of the things you can see in the CalMatters documentary is sort of like the spots along the highways around agricultural fields where Border Patrol went. And so many of the people we talked to, including many of our clients, were farm workers who were driving to or from work that day. She was arrested without any evaluation of her risk of flight, was carted down to the El Centro Border Patrol station, and she was scared. I mean, this was unexpected, and it was scary. And in the Border Patrol station, the conditions are coercive. There's no bed. It's freezing. You don't know what's happening to you. You don't know when you're going to get to leave. You're being detained in a windowless room. And at first, an agent came to her and said, do you want voluntary departure or do you want to see a judge? And she didn't know what to do, didn't know what to say. And so her first reaction was like, I guess I kind of have to go. I guess I'll take voluntary departure. As soon as she thought about it, she thought like, no way. I live here. My community is here. My family is here. I want to fight my case. So she told the agent, I changed my mind. The agent said, you can't change your mind. And she repeatedly tried to get Border Patrol to allow her to exercise her right under immigration law, her right under the Constitution to see a judge and fight her case. In the end, they presented her with some forms. She didn't have any ID when she was arrested. She was a passenger in the car. So they truly knew nothing about her. She was just in a car with other farm workers. They told her she needed to sign some paperwork that was confirming her identity because she didn't have her ID on her. They didn't show her the paperwork. The way it seems like it's set up in that station is the agent is looking at a computer screen with, like, I imagine, you know, whatever document people are signing. And they present people with a small digital device. I'm thinking of it sort of like what you sign in a coffee shop or something. Like, there's some kind of pad with just a signature box. They said, you need to sign this to confirm your identity. She didn't want to sign anything, but there's a real power imbalance here. They're not letting people call lawyers. No one is getting correct information about what their rights are. And they've been in this windowless room for days. They held people for up to 3 days. So she signed. The next day, they put her on a bus and it takes her to Mexico. And she's shocked, shocked. They hand her a stack of papers. And in that stack of papers, she finds a voluntary departure agreement with her signature. No one had told her that's what she was signing. She had insisted that she wanted to see a judge. She had done everything right to exercise her rights, and they trampled all over them. And she has now had to scramble to try to build a life in Mexico when her family is here, her community is here. This is not a raid that kept a community safer. This is a raid that tore a community apart. And I think Maria is a great example of that.
I've got to wrap this up, but I want to give all three of you an opportunity for final thoughts. Bree, I'm going to sort of direct your final thoughts a little bit. I'm wondering, and this is a question I'm asking in a lot of spaces, both as a journalist, as an organizer, where we're asking what levers of relief we actually have available to us now under a Trump administration that has made it clear he don't care about people, protests, or the courts.
Do you want me to go first? Is that one for me?
Yeah. Yep.
like
yeah,
90
he
seconds.
Doesn't care. You know, I think what the common theme across what the president has been doing right now is trying to consolidate his power and seeing what reaction it draws. So to me, that makes it all the more important that we raise our voices when we disagree with what we're seeing from the administration. You know, we have seen this really public attempt to defy court orders in really high profile cases. That's not happening in every case. Usually they appeal. And if we are angry that they are trying to defy the courts, which are here to provide a check, obviously, on executive authority, we need to speak out. So I think, you know, I think the crux of your question is, do we give up? What do? We don't give up. We keep fighting and we raise our voices because he's testing to see whether we will. And I think we need to make a really strong showing that this is not what we want. We do not want our communities torn apart. And what they did in this raid was not legal.
Sergio, 60 seconds for final thoughts.
Yeah. So, you know, if you're a viewer and you're thinking, if you have no empathy for another person, you don't care about immigration, you don't care at all about the Central Valley, et cetera, like, you would think, why do I care about this story? To me, it's everybody would, because everybody cares about a public agency telling the public the truth about what they're doing, right? So, you know, you can see in the documentary, you can see Bovino, he says his piece. He says, you know, we had a list of targeted people with criminal histories that we went after as a target operation. And, you know, my colleague Wendy Fry got documents from Customs and Border Protection that show that, no, that was not true. 77 out of 78 people, they had no knowledge of criminal or immigration history prior to encountering them. They didn't know who they were. You know, this is a public agency telling the public one thing and then months later still on camera saying the same thing, and we find out that's not true. Everybody would care. You cannot run a democracy in which the public agencies are not telling the public what they're doing. That's just not, I mean, the democracy doesn't work, right? You public agencies need to tell the public exactly what they're doing. They are not companies. They can't be manipulating the public. So aside from what, you know, Bri is saying, like, just on a basic level, even if you don't care about another person or immigration, you do care about your government telling you the truth.
Yeah, my listeners care about all of this, but point taken. I mean, Wendy, you've got
I do too. I'm just saying.
Yeah. No, we're clear. You do. This is friendly audience here, and probably enraged audience after listening to this. Wendy, last 60 seconds, and then I've got to move on.
Just like to add too that you know, this Border Patrol chief is still maintaining, you know, he just made comments recently, very recently, on social media on our Facebook page about, you know, he still believes Border Patrol has the right to do warrantless stops because of being in a border zone. So I don't know, he didn't read the DHS filing or what, the training maybe hasn't happened yet, but you know, he still is maintaining that, you know, he did nothing wrong in his statements that he's making even more recently after this information has all come out. So that's something to keep watching. And then the other thing I'll say is, you know, these impulse policy decisions and impulse raids that happen have long, 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 long lasting impacts on families and communities. There are still children who were separated from their families under the first Trump administration, who still to this day have not been reunited with their families. So when we think about these things that are happening with these families being torn apart, you have to think it's gonna be so many years before you know, they maybe ever get to see their family again.
All right. Thank you, all three of you, for your work and for coming on the show this morning. We will be tracking this and likely have you all back.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world in which all of us can thrive. That's it for this episode, family. You can find more information about topics and guests in this episode's show notes. Law and Disorder is produced at KPFA. That's listener-supported radio on the Pacifica Network. The show is produced by Jesse Strauss and hosted by me, Kat Brooks. Our theme music was composed by Steve Raskin of Fort Knox 5. If you like what you heard, please follow us on social media at Law and Dis, that's D-I-S, and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Feel free to holler at us about something you heard or send us a show idea at lawanddisorder@kpfa.org. You can also find our content live at 8 a.m. weekdays on KPFA. That's 94.1 FM in the Bay Area. Our show and all of KPFA's programs are funded exclusively by you, the listener. And if you're in a position to support us, please donate today at kpfa.org. Take care of yourself and take care of each other. We all we got, fam.